Alrighty, yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Morning Yankee Show. It is Thursday, May 7th, 2026. Good morning to everybody tuning in live. And of course, watching later on the replay here on YouTube. Or you could also listen to the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Whatever your way of consuming the Morning Yankee Show, it is an absolute pleasure to have you here this morning. Hope everybody is doing well as we get closer and closer to wrapping up the week. It is, of course, Thursday. And the Yankees, speaking of wrapping up, will be wrapping up a three-game set against the Texas Rangers, which is now a rubber match today because the Yankees dropped yesterday's game. You know, a Will Warren clunker was bound to happen at some point. That's all well and good. And the Yankee loss was bound to happen at some point. You know, you do the math. It's not ideal to have a rough start when, you know, from your starter in the case of Will Warren last night, which, again, that'll happen. You know, it's all good. And he talked about it. He seemed pretty upset in the postgame, to be honest. And I'm like, Will, it's okay. And I got to say, I'm very impressed with how the fan base is handling things. And it's not just because we're playing well. You know, we obviously have talked a lot by now about the hot starts we've gotten off to in years previous, but there's been a lot more vibes-centered happiness in past years, whereas this year you can actually apply logic to a lot of the reasons why we've been so excited about this team. And, you know, Will Warren yesterday was not good. We know that. And, you know, I guess we can kind of get into things right away. We won't spend too much time on yesterday's game because, you know, there's actually not much to discuss, but I do want to talk about it really quick. Obviously, you know, Will Warren, he got hit around yesterday. And I love the responses to when I posted the final line on Yanks Ave on Instagram. Everybody was just saying, go get him next time, Will. You'll bounce back. You know, clunkers happen. And that is absolutely the case. And that's what yesterday was for Warren. You know, gave up a couple home runs, did manage 7 strikeouts. The stuff looked good. Command, not so much. And his final line was, 6 earned runs over just 4 innings pitched. And got to shout out Yerry De Los Santos, who has since been optioned after last night's game. But he, as well as Ryan Yarbrough, really put the Yankees in a good spot entering today where, you know, Warren only gives you 4. And then from there, Yerry comes in and ends up going 3-plus innings scoreless. Was it 4 innings total? Whatever it was, him and Yarbrough, mostly from Yerry, though, combined to finish the game off for the Yankees. And that obviously is not insignificant. It sets up the bullpen for today. And, you know, he's on the shuttle back to Scranton, was essentially, you know, very much one of those guys that's, hey, bail us out today, and then we'll pack your bags after that. But, yeah, Yerry De Los Santos optioned following yesterday's game. Shout out to him because that was an important performance. Don't know who yet the corresponding move is, but you got to figure it's another reliever, obviously. Now, we'll touch on Ryan Weathers in a moment, but if you haven't heard, he's not starting today. He was scratched due to an illness. We'll spend a minute on that. But really quick, I just want to talk about Nathan Eovaldi, man. It's very rare for me to compliment an opponent. Very rare. And sometimes I take it too far and I say certain things about the opponent. I don't do that anymore. I'm wise and mature. I'm a grown man now, Chad. Or at least I'm making my way there. I'm trying. But, you know, in the case of Nathan Eovaldi, you just got to acknowledge how great he is. And, of course, you know, the one lone Yankee run they did score yesterday was Aaron Judge's 15th home run of the year. He now is in sole possession of the league lead in all of baseball, actually, and, of course, the American League as well. Murakami is 14, Judge is 15. But anyways, with Eovaldi, he really has my respect. And it's one thing for the Yankees to get shut down against, you know, a pitcher that, whether it be a rookie making his debut, we've seen that in the past, or getting shut down by a quote-unquote bum. Like, that's one thing. And that often will come when the Yankees' offense is in a spot where, you know, we're not hitting. And thank goodness that we tagged DeGrom for 6 earned runs the other day because, you know, that kind of eased the narrative of, oh, Yankees can't hit good pitching. Well, what are you going to say when we just did what we did at DeGrom? But in the case of Nathan Eovaldi, he is absolutely a Yankee killer, and he was utterly terrific last night. 8 innings of 1 earned run because of the Judge homer. And that, of course, coming off last week in Arlington where he shut us down as well. And not to put this out in the air, but I mentioned the watch party yesterday. He's so good against us. And by the way, part of the reason why I like him so much is, like, he never shows up the opponent. There's nothing about Eovaldi to not like besides just how well he pitches against you. And he's continuing to own the Yankees. And I feel fine saying this, what I'm about to say, because I don't think anybody is a GM in baseball listening to Dan Roark for advice. But if I'm a team that looks at the Yankees as their ultimate competition, whether it be any contender in the American League that figures, you know, to get to the World Series, you got to get through the Yankees, which, you know, is kind of true. Or even if you're the Dodgers, I don't know what their starting pitching situation is right now. Like, you know, I just know generally that they're kind of loaded, right? But Roki, it's been a weird year, whatever it may be. Say the Dodgers need a starting pitcher. Well, if you plan on having to get through the Yankees at some point, whether that's through the AL or come the World Series, if you need a starting pitcher, you should get Nathan Eovaldi, honestly. any team that is a contender that thinks they're going to have to get through the Yankees at some point in October, if they need a starting pitcher, would be wise to acquire Nathan Eovaldi. That's how well he does against us. And he's a gamer, yo. Not to, you know, I feel like I have one corny slash cliche sports talk radio word that I throw into each episode. That's what I'm going to do in this case, use it right here on Eovaldi. He's just a flat out gamer. And everything about him, I just really respect. And I don't do this often. Sometimes I go the complete opposite and it can get me into a little bit of trouble, which again, I don't do that anymore. I'm coming along, I think. But yeah, Eovaldi was just flat out terrific yesterday. So in a way, I'm kind of shouting him out. And that's the story from yesterday's game. Warren, a rare clunker. That'll happen. It's all good. Judge went deep, 15th home run of the year, word up. But otherwise, like that's the game. Eovaldi dominated, Warren wasn't good, and the Yankees ended up losing the middle game against the Rangers. So with that, you have a series finale today, and that's a 12:35 first pitch. By the way, not going to be able to do a watch party just because I'm still going to be doing baseball today by that time, but we'll be back tomorrow night against Milwaukee for the watch parties. Anyways, some news to discuss here. If you have not heard, Ryan Weathers was scratched from his start today due to an illness. Now, of course, he had come off paternity leave prior to his most recent start against Baltimore, where he was still pretty good. Wasn't great, but he got the win. He went 5+, allowed 2 earned runs. Apparently, he was dealing with that illness during that start, so it got pretty bad. And we're going to hear from Weathers quickly in just a moment, but it'll be Paul Blackburn on the bump for the Yankees today. And, you know, Blackburn's actually been pretty good. He has a 3-2-1 ERA. I'm not sure how today's start's going to look, and I do consider today to be an important game because, you know, the Rays won again last night. And the Rays, you know, I said this in the watch party yesterday. You know, I'll play along. If they're down to do this, let's do it. Like, maybe the Rays are going to be an American League East contender because I was doing a little bit of a deep dive yesterday. And by deep dive, I mean just, you know, reading articles. The Rays pitching, whether it be like the metrics or just the true feel of who their staff is considered to be very sustainable. So if their rotation is actually going to be as good as it's been, and I think their bullpen has been pretty damn good as well, then maybe they are going to be in this. Anyways, the Rays win again yesterday. They beat Toronto. They're not just a half game back of us in the American League East. So, you know, I've been kind of getting some pushback here and there, whether it's on Talking Yanks yesterday, which thank you guys so much for the support on yesterday's episode, by the way. For those who don't know, this is, you know, my main channel, Yankees Avenue, been doing this for a long time. This new morning show is brand new and it's 5 days a week. So if you're looking for some more Yankee content, different than Talking Yanks, but we are here live every morning right around 8 a.m. Anyways, I was talking about the Rays yesterday on Talking Yanks. I was talking about them on our show and got a little bit of pushback like, Dan, you should respect the Rays. And I do respect the Rays. Trust me, I do. And I said this line on Talking Yanks yesterday. They could be 10 games under 500 and I would not look forward to playing them. I never look forward to playing the Rays. Well, maybe I should give them a little more respect in regards to the division race, at least as of right now, because after yesterday's loss, they're just a half game back. So between that, between just, you know, want to keep the vibes high, coming off of Tuesday night against the Rangers, a great game one, one of the best ones of the season, in my opinion. You lose yesterday, that is all good. And, you know, we're going to lose a series at some point. I don't want it to be today. Let's take care of business. And if we're going to take care of business, we'll need a good outing, at least to a degree, from Paul Blackburn. And going for the Rangers will be Mackenzie Gore, which first time we're seeing him this year. We did face him last year in August, end of August. He went 5 innings, 3 earned runs when he was still at the Nationals. Now, for those who don't know, we should keep in mind, historically, at least through his like first 2 full years, Gore has been terrible in the second half. So we faced him last year during that terrible second half. And, you know, we were okay against him, 5 innings, 3 earned runs. We'll see what he's got today. This is our first time facing him this year. So today will be Blackburn versus Mackenzie Gore. Now, let's take a listen to what Ryan Weathers was dealing with, because he said he lost 9 pounds. Like, this was a legitimate, like, illness. He's all good now, but more so because of, you know, the weight that he lost. You'll hear him talk about it, but the Yankees are now going to start him on Monday. Let's take a listen to what Ryan Weathers was dealing with, because it sounded pretty legit.
Before the game, I didn't feel good. Pitched, and then yeah, I just went home and pretty much threw my guts out for several hours. Thought I just had food poisoning. Woke up the next day and was running 102 temp. And yeah, I was just pretty much bedridden for a couple days. And then today's the first full day I've been back around the team. Obviously, I wish I could throw tomorrow, but we just deemed it's not worth it to risk my arm health. I lost 9 pounds in 2 days. Couldn't really eat anything, couldn't drink anything. So, you know, got an IV today and felt a lot better.
I had a 102 temp. Sounded pretty legit. And, you know, Ryan Weathers, you could tell, he's got that post-sickness glow where you feel like shit for a good week and then you finally feel better afterwards and you're just like, yo, I feel like $1 million. He's all good now. So it makes sense, you know, lost all that weight. 9 pounds in a week is pretty insane. And with that, you know, he said he's healthy, he's ready to go, but you don't want to risk the arm health. And they always have, you know, a bullpen they throw, which I believe he'll throw either today or tomorrow. And then he'll start Monday in Baltimore. So Paul Blackburn on the bump today. Paul Blackburn versus Mackenzie Gore. Hopefully Yankees take care of business today. We will see. I believe that's all the notes I have on that. And again, Yair De Los Santos, shout out to him yesterday. He was that was a very important performance by him coming after Will Warren. He was optioned. We'll see exactly what the move is. Maybe we have it live right here. Nope, nothing yet. We'll get it soon. But yeah, 12:35 first pitch. That game, of course, is going to be on YES. But let's move on to some other things here, Chad. I want to officially talk and like break down Spencer Jones because he is really putting up some insane numbers at AAA. And if it weren't for the K rate dropping the way it has over the last few weeks, he's still at a 32% K rate on the season. And to preface this, I said this yesterday, but we really do got to keep in mind if a player, even as good as Jones has been, if he's going to be a above 30% K rate guy, it just, you can't get too excited about how the production will translate to the big league level. Doesn't mean, you know, if Jones were to, say, somehow translate from a 32% K rate in AAA to a 32% K rate at the big leagues, while also allowing the 958 OPS that he has this year to translate, all right, that's fine. Strikeouts can be worth your while if you're getting production to make up for it otherwise, but in all odds, you translate that to the big leagues, it's not 32% to 32%, it'd be 32% to possibly over 40. With that said, he continues to rake in the minor leagues, and over the last few weeks, his K rate is right around 25 to like 27%, depending on, you know, how far back you go. Got off to a brutal start in AAA. K rate was like through the roof, and you know, the first week he really wasn't doing much offensively, but lately he has just been going off. 11 home runs, 41 RBIs, which is, I mean, I don't care what level you're at, if you're playing in the instructional league, and 41 RBIs in a little over 30 games played is incredible. And 11 home runs, he continues to just mash the ball, and he's just been red hot as of late. So I'm kind of posing the question here, given the fact that the K rate has come down, and that makes him, you know, more of an actual, a tangible thought come, you know, or in regards to the big league level, what would it take for Spencer Jones to be called up this year? And, you know, we can kind of go through it. I think there's a few different options here. First things first, not to keep mentioning the K rate, but you have to. Like, that is the conversation with Spencer Jones. That's really always been the conversation with Spencer Jones. The production was great last year. The K rate wasn't. But given that it's been trending down over the last couple weeks, what's a situation that could arise for Jones to get the call? And I'll tell you right now, it's not Trent Grisham struggling. His defense has been really good in center field. And we've talked about the batted ball luck. You know, doesn't excuse come year's end or even, you know, a month or two from now him to still be hitting 176, but we're still early enough. We've seen good signs. The chase rate is still good with Grisham, hitting the ball hard. He's gotten some bad luck. We just got to continue to see it through with Trent Grisham. If you want to talk about him leading off, I will hear you out on that. You guys know I'm thinking, come stand return, I want to lead off Ben Rice. Anyways, it's not going to be production with Grisham that leads to Jones getting called up. I ultimately think, and I guess this is an obvious statement, but it will come down to injury. Now, injury to who? Anyways, if Trent Grisham were to get hurt, which you don't want to happen, knock on wood, I think that could result in a Spencer Jones call-up. If any outfielder, I should say, were to get hurt, and there's more scenarios as well we'll talk about, but if any outfielder were to get hurt, could you see Jason Dominguez being the guy the Yankees just throw out in the outfield? Right now, honestly, I couldn't. The Yankees are prioritizing defense, which is the way to go, and if you're prioritizing defense, or just, you know, a competent ball club, you don't want to play Jason Dominguez in the outfield. And I'm a Jason Dominguez fan. I love him hitting, and I love him being the replacement for Stanton at DH while he's out. Big fan of Jason Dominguez. We've been, you know, gassing him up for a minute now with the way he handled being demoted to AAA to begin the season, losing playing time last year. As I've said, my favorability towards Jason Dominguez has only skyrocketed over the last year. I love Jason. He's not a major league caliber outfielder, though. He's just not. So with that said, if there were to be an injury to anybody, which you hope doesn't happen, obviously, I think Jones is indeed next in line, which sounds obvious, but I'm telling you, if he was still striking out at a ridiculous clip, which again, 32% on the season at AAA, but last few weeks it's been around like 25 to 27%, which that will play. I think we could see Jones in that regard. Now, Ben Rice is fine. We don't know if he'll be in the lineup today. I would like to think come Friday against Milwaukee he will be, if not in the finale against the Rangers. We'll see, but he's not going to the IL. If he were to ever, though, again, knock on wood, you hope it doesn't happen. Spencer Jones, whether it be, you know, I think he's, no, that's not true. I was about to say he's had some time at first base. He should have gotten time at first base over the last few years. I don't really think he has. But obviously you have Bellinger who can then play first. If there would ever be an injury, God forbid, to Ben Rice that lands him on the IL, that could have Jones be called up. You put him in the outfield and then Bellinger goes to first. Other than that, though, and let me know if you guys disagree, please. I want to hear your opinion on this because more so the story with this is now, I think it's – he's not to say he's one phone call away the way Curry described Lombard, because I think Lombard has more of a path possibly that isn't injury-related. We'll see. But with Jones, I don't know what the deal would be if there's not a circumstance that calls for him to be brought up. Now, what does that mean for his future? It's not the end of the world if the Yankees do believe in Spencer Jones, which you figure they do. Now, if there's a trade that comes up that makes sense and equates to the value the Yankees consider Spencer Jones to be at right now, I'm not against making a move if it makes sense. With that said, we have heard, and in large part because of the K rate, that's why we keep mentioning it, other teams are kind of not a huge fan of Jones because of that K rate. And, you know, a lot of teams look at him as like the next Joey Gallo, which, you know, fair. At that point, if there's not a trade available, there's not anything wrong with keeping him in the minor leagues this year. I know he's getting up there in age, but Trent Grisham is obviously a free agent at year's end, and he can't be given the qualifying offer 2 years in a row. So let's just say for a second, for argument's sake, that he's gone after this year. Trent Grisham, the Yankees don't re-sign. Well, barring the K rate going back up, I'm not against just letting Jones ride out the year in AAA no matter what. And then come next year, kind of just be like, okay, we're going to give you a chance to take the center fielder's job. And that's a big part of this as well. Spencer is good defensively. He's a great athlete, and he plays center, and he plays it well. He could essentially be the heir to the throne, which is a very important position, obviously, but especially for the Yankees, for those that have, you know, read into the Yankee way, they historically consider center field to be a very important position, which is obvious, but defense is a big part of that. So knowing that he can play the position, he can play it well, maybe you just look at it like, all right, this year there's probably not going to be a lane for him, at least if I were to guess, barring, again, injury, which is very much possible. Center field next year, I would not rule out as being, you know, a legitimate possibility, maybe even opening day. If you let him ride out the year this year at AAA and he puts up what will probably be, I mean, a full year at AAA for Jones right now is looking like 40-plus homers, 100-plus RBIs. Again, the OPS that you see on the screen is at 958, as we've been mentioning. Last time I'll say it, but you got to. If the K rate continues to improve, which it has been, sub 30%, which if it continues to over the sample size for the rest of the year, it will on the season dip below that 30% number. I'm not against at all. I actually kind of look forward to the possibility of him being the heir to the throne to center field. And at this point, maybe that's what the Yankees are thinking too, because, you know, we've talked a lot about past Yankee, the way they've operated with prospects. And this is something we were talking about on Talking Yanks yesterday too, but the Yankees very rarely will send a prospect in a trade that you later are like, oh man, I wish we had that guy, at least in the current regime over the last decade or so. I had not been against at all, if anything, I was advocating for it, one of Jason or Spencer to be traded to capitalize on value and not just let them go the route of many prospects previous where they had value at some point and they didn't make an ultimate impact at the big league level and then eventually they just get DFA'd because their value goes down and you end up getting nothing for them. No big league production, no trade value or anything like that. So that's kind of why I was saying one of the two you got to trade before, you know, you're DFA'ing them in 3 years. Well, if there's no trade that makes sense for Jones this summer, which very well could be, we don't know. And Jason at this point, I mean, what we talked about with Stanton getting hurt, whether that's him filling in right now or if Stanton were to be out a little while, and it sounds like maybe he will be. Stanton, by the way, he's begun swinging, but he hasn't really begun running all that much. Of course, he had the it's a low-grade calf strain for him. It sounds like Stanton won't be back during this road trip. So anyways, side note, Jason will still continue to get some extended run at DH. And I like that. He fits in perfectly as the DH replacement for Stanton. And, you know, we are in year 9 of Stanton. Next year will be the last year of his deal. Jason's still only 23. I kind of just look at, until Stanton, his contract is up, Jason will just be the DH when he's not healthy or needs a day off, which even when Stanton is healthy, we'll, you know, give him some time, a day off every now and then. And then whenever Stanton's gone, Jason will still only be like 25 by then. He can just become the DH. And ultimately, let's just be honest, at this point, Jason is a DH. So his role is kind of working for me right now, very much so. So with that said, it's not a thing where we have two up-and-coming outfielders. No, we have a DH, and I think his position right now is kind of set in stone, and he's doing it well. Jones, though, like we've been saying, very much could be the heir to the throne of center field come next year. And that's a fine lane for him to be in. If things keep him in AAA throughout the year and he continues to produce, lowers a K rate, I'm cool with that. I'm down for that. I'm actually excited at the possibility of that. As for this year, though, only way he comes up, I think, is due to injury. And that doesn't mean he won't come up, because that's obviously very possible. On the topic of injuries, the Yankees have done very well in that regard so far this year. Now, knock on wood, I'm not bringing this up to, you know, just throw a jinx out there for no reason. And, you know, there will be more IL since that's just how baseball works. But I just want to mention really quick, and let me know what you guys think. Is this just good luck so far with the Yankees and injuries? Or is it, you know, part of a continued conversation we've had where the Yankees can learn? The Yankees can understand that, like we've been saying, a lineup full of right-handed hitters is not the way to go. Having hitters that strike out like crazy is not the way to go. Now, there was never a point where they thought injuries are part of the game that, you know, you should... I mean, no, I shouldn't say that. Obviously, injuries are part of the game to plan around, but they never were flawed in their thinking about injuries, at least in terms of, you know, the repercussions of it. You don't want your players to get hurt. That's what I'm saying. But is this a product of the Yankees learning how to do things better? And I don't know. It could just be good luck so far. And I'm sure that's part of it no matter what, but... You know, we've seen a lot of turnover with the Yankees' strength and conditioning coaches and, you know, the training program really ever since 2019, the run it back year. Not run it back year, that's this year. What was 2019? Next man up. And maybe they have, yeah, finally found a training staff that is better suited for the modern game, better suited to prevent injuries that you at least can somewhat have an impact on preventing. And I don't know. It could just be good luck. It could be an improvement in process. But I do want to mention on the topic of injuries, the Yankees have done very, very well in that regard. And yeah, knock on wood. But as for Spencer Jones, it's starting to get exciting because he is just, again, whether it be the 41 RBIs and a little over 30 games played at AAA, that is, it's a pretty insane number. And the 11 home runs, 958 OPS. And ultimately, you know, he has just been producing. Last year was a great year for him. This year so far, an even better year for him. And again, if it were to be a thing, say this entirely translates to the big leagues, you can afford a 32% K rate if you're getting a 958 OPS. But you figure, you know, just translating those stats to the big leagues, that ain't exactly going to happen. That's kind of a pipe dream. But main thing is he continues to rake, and he's also starting to lower the K rate as well. It's getting exciting with Spencer Jones, and he's kind of put himself back on the map, at least regarding my view of him, which wasn't, you know, completely deteriorated or nothing, but I just didn't know what value does he have. And I have heard that other organizations don't love Jones. Yankees probably wouldn't get proper trade value back for him. Proper as in, you know, they still value him, but would they get a return that makes sense to ship him out? And with all this in mind, you shouldn't look to ship Spencer Jones out. And maybe that's where I kind of, I don't want to say, you know, I'll admit my mistakes. I wanted to trade George Lombard for Freddie Peralta this past winter. That was complete L by me, and I take that back. A rare L by me, at least this past offseason. Because otherwise, Chad, I think I kind of cooked. But with all that said, maybe I was a little too ready to, yeah, trade Spencer Jones if a deal were to arise. And if a deal does arise, it makes sense. I'm certainly not, still not against it. But, yeah, where I'm at right now, I guess, to bring all this topic home is, I think he's our everyday center fielder next year. Spencer Jones. Right now, I think that should be the plan. Obviously, this does not involve any, like, insight into next year's free agency class or moves the Yankees could make. Ultimately, this is a conversation for next year, but that's really what this is about, I think, is the answer here. It's going to be next year. Otherwise, it would take like a significant injury, which could obviously happen. But yeah, just to acknowledge that Spencer Jones really is doing some impressive things at AAA. And yeah, maybe this is a mess to myself, but we shouldn't take that lightly. It's pretty significant. And man, if it ever were to work, this is a side note, but he's got the look, man. There's times, I remember saying this about Gleyber after his, when Gleyber first came up in 2018, and his first couple weeks were insane, and it was right around actually this time, I believe, in 2018, where he hit the walk-off against Cleveland, which really kind of put the cherry on top to what was a great first couple weeks. And I remember he posted with his like fiance at the time, him in Times Square, and I'm just like, man, what a life that must be. If you come up as a Yankee and you make it, life just must be great. And I bring this up because Spencer, what matters is the talent, what matters is the production, how he'll translate to the big league level, but This is an interesting point to bring up on a sports talk show, but it's part of it. He's got the look, man, and he would just play so well if it does work out in the big league level, at the big league level, where he would be a star, an absolute star. And what if it does work out to where, at least to the point where he's the everyday guy in center field, come next year, you pair him with Judge, he'll be in center, Judge in right. And not to be the play the numbers game, although I love to do this. Obviously, a lack of numbers available, and I'm sure he wouldn't want to go this route, but it would be really cool not to put bad mojo on him with the, you know, the Clint Frazier PTSD. But Jones wearing center or playing center field wearing number 77, I would love that, Chad. I would love that. With Judge obviously next to him and right wearing 99. But yeah, if he can make it in the big leagues, which right now he's a conversation given his production AAA, he would be a star, man. He's got the look. He's obviously huge. He's 6'7". And for those who don't know, this is our first round draft pick from a couple years ago. Went to Vanderbilt. I mean, this kid can be box office. And again, we'll run this video one more time as we wrap this up. He is just hitting tanks. And it's interesting with his build. So, you know, I know some of you may be listening on podcasts later on, but just watching him, he looks a lot more like, you know, he's the same size as Judge, but Judge doesn't really look like a clunky big guy. Like, Stanton kind of looks that way. Judge does not. Jones, like, even just watching him around the bases, he looks, like, more lengthy. He looks a little more, in a non-insulting way, obviously, a little more like, his body's a little more awkward looking in terms of, like, that big dude. More Stanton-like, more, I'm trying to think of another example here, but it's different than Judge. It's very different than Judge. What's not that different, though, is now the approach to the plate and his new load, his stance, which we know we've talked about a lot this past spring training, where a lot of his similarities to Shohei Ohtani are quite prevalent, and that was intentional by Jones. He went to work, whether it's implying or applying some of the things he's taken from Judge, but also Ohtani. And bottom line is, we're in a spot right now with Spencer Jones where it actually feels like something you can get excited about, particularly because of K-Rate, we keep mentioning, but we have to because that's the biggest story with him. And knowing that Grisham's a free agent after this year, like, there is a lane for Jones to be an everyday guy in New York. And if it were to work out, it would be pretty damn exciting with him in center field, Judge in right, Bellinger will still be in left, of course. And that's another part of this as well. If you let Bellinger walk, or excuse me, Grisham walk in free agency, well, this isn't a huge deal, but then ultimately you probably have Cody Bellinger playing center, which he can do, but he's a much better left fielder than he is center fielder. He's one of the best defensive left fielders in baseball right now, Bellinger is, so you want to keep him there. Jones in center just makes sense. And then around the diamond, you'd have Rice at first base, homegrown. We know at some point, possibly even this year, but just talking long-term at shortstop, Lombard is the guy, he's homegrown. Also, Jazz, I don't think the Yankees will bring him back in free agency. Right now, I would say the likelihood of second base next year trends in Anthony Volpe's favor. And with that, you know, Austin Wells, I think, will still be behind the plate. Like, it would just be a continuation of this homegrown core that we're developing. And this is something I said on Talking Yanks yesterday, too, where, you know, it feels kind of similar to the early to mid-90s Yankees dynasty when the core was coming up. And you had Don Mattingly still. But the difference is, you know, I equate kind of like Mattingly to Judge. You have Judge, who is the face of this team, obviously, but you have a young core coming up, like, under him. Difference is, though, Judge is still in his prime. Mattingly, obviously, wasn't. So, I mean, this is another part of, like, the continued discussion of very exciting time to be a Yankee fan. And if Spencer Jones can be something, I'm not going to lie. Like, all of a sudden, I'm starting to think he can be, and I'm excited about it. I'm excited about it. I know there'll be some pushback, like, oh, obviously Spencer Jones can be good. We don't know that. And it's not just based off of, you know, hits a bomb in spring training or looking like Shohei. You see the AAA stats. That plays a role, obviously. But ultimately, we don't know what'll translate, what won't translate. He might even be better in the big leagues than a 958 OPS. Like, Judge's stats in the minors were never all that insane. But his K-rate also was never really at the level of where Jones is at. And again, if this production exactly, identically, just for argument's sake, a 958 OPS, 32% K-rate, you get that exactly in the big leagues, all right, that will play. You know, Judge, not so much these days. He's more around like a 25% K-rate, which with his production, he could be way more than that and still be valuable. But there were times early in Judge's career, like 2017 to like 2019-ish, where he was around that 30% mark, but the production made up for it. Same with Jones. If he's at that production with a K-rate that high, that's no problem. Like, even McMahon, who, you know, we know he's been hitting the ball pretty well lately, he strikes out over 30% of the time. If McMahon was, just generally speaking, I know he's been lately, but just generally speaking, like, a good hitter, an above-league average hitter, you can afford a K-rate. At least you can stomach it a little better than you could with production that's not there. But ultimately, that's going to be a big part of the Jones conversation and also the circumstances that allow him to come up. It'll either be for this year, simple as just injuries, which could happen. Next year, though, it might be a pretty easy lane of the starting center fielder come Trent Grisham's departure, assuming that does happen. Anyways, that's where I'm at with Spencer Jones. Let me know what you guys think. in the comment section down below. Alrighty, let's move on to some other news. Of course, Carlos Rodon set to make his season debut Sunday at Milwaukee. That is now official. Also on the bottom tagline there too, some news on Gerrit Cole. He's going to be making at least two or three more rehab starts. And yeah, so Rodon, he will of course take the place of Elmer Rodriguez, who was sent down recently, made his last start for a good bit. Rodon, Sunday, he will be back with the Yankees. Really quick, just on, you know, him as a pitcher. I do think some are underestimating the return of Rodon, kind of, you know, maybe it's in the reason that the Yankee rotation has been so good, and you kind of get nervous that, oh, like, don't want to mess with the mojo. Like, that doesn't apply to Rodon. He is really, really good. 18-game winner last year, ERA just barely over three, a tremendous batting average against a really low whip. Far and away the best season he's had as a Yankee last year, a very complete year. And even the start against Boston, he actually wasn't great in this start, but the elbow issue was very much prevalent during this outing, and he still went six innings, three runs, not his best outing, but ended up giving the Yankees a chance to win this game, which they did. Remember, we always have to emphasize here that come that start, come the end of the season, come the Blue Jays start, his elbow, he literally could not straighten it out. That's how bad the injury was. And he kept on pitching, made a full 33-game start, 33 games started, and pitched really well. So now he'll make his debut come this year. And that's not so much what I'm going to talk about here. Obviously, have some patience with him and especially Cole. The first outing may not be good. And if it's not, we just got to be patient. Obviously, want to win every game, you know, that he pitches, that everybody pitches. We want to win every game there is. But, you know, it may be a slight, not adjustment process coming back, but, you know, he could be a little bit rusty coming off the IL. We should expect that with anybody, especially Gerrit Cole coming off of TJ. But ultimately, long-term, Carlos Rodon, really good. And this is a big return for the Yankees to get. And that will be on Sunday. Now, something I'm wondering about is what will be the corresponding move come Sunday when Rodon is officially activated? Now, we know Yeri came up in the meantime after Elmer was sent down. Yeri has since been sent down. Yankees will call up a fresh arm to be in the bullpen. Whoever that may be, I'm curious if come Sunday, they're not just sent back down automatically. Would the Yankees consider, and they very much should, and shout out to Randy Wilkins, he's been all over this, and he's absolutely right. The Yankees do not need to be carrying two long men in the bullpen. Now, Paul Blackburn, and it's Paul Blackburn and Ryan Yarbrough, the two long men in the bullpen. There's one obvious one that you would want to keep, and it's the man who's starting today in Blackburn. Not that he's been exceptional, but he's actually been pretty good. Again, ERA of 3.21 in about 14 innings pitched so far this season. Nothing even against Yarbrough, but you just simply do not need two long men. Yarbrough was initially signed, as probably Blackburn was as well, but Yarbrough especially was initially signed when Yankees were, you know, you find out Rodon is going to miss the start of the year. And at that time, we had not acquired Ryan Weathers. And I was like, all right, we could use some starting pitching insurance, some starting pitching depth. And early in the offseason, it was, all right, Yarbrough will be the fifth starter. Well, obviously, we didn't end up needing him to be the fifth starter. We had Ryan Weathers, and he's been great. There's not a role right now for Yarbrough. And I'm very curious if come Sunday, at Rodon's activation, if they would indeed cut Yarbrough, give him the DFA. Because again, main point here is you do not need two long men out of the bullpen. And even seeing Yeri yesterday, whether it be him back up, which you would need an injury to call him up before, you know, you can't call a guy back up until 10 days after you send him down. But just seeing like having Yeri in the bullpen, it'd be nice to have a legitimate middle relief option on top of the guys that we've had, which the bullpen, you know, we discussed Hedrick, Cruz, Hill, Bednar even. Like, it's the bullpen's actually been pretty damn good. The depth is more so the issue right now. And this is a big part of it. You have both Yarbrough and Blackburn on the roster. You don't need them both. Keep Blackburn. Should probably DFA Yarb. Nothing against him, but his role is just not needed anymore. So with that in mind, I'm curious come Sunday what the move would be. And let me just check my phone again really quick if there's any... no news just yet, but I don't know. Maybe the guy that comes up today is a corresponding move for Yeri going down could be a guy that stays with us for a minute. Maybe it's Giovanni Cruz, who's been exceptional down at AAA. Maybe he comes up today and or whenever, and then they keep him on the roster even through Rodon's activation come Sunday, and then Yarbrough gets the boot. Again, nothing against Yarbrough. His role is just simply not needed. So that's where I'm at regarding Rodon's return and like the potential corresponding moves. But in regards to just Rodon, big get to get him back, and I'm looking forward to it. Sunday, he will make his season debut. All righty, let's move on to some other things here. Quick note on George Lombard Jr. So Baseball America released their new updated rankings of the top 100 prospects in baseball, and I feel like we just had to acknowledge this. George Lombard Jr. has jumped to number 15 on the top 100 prospect list. He was previously number 46 on the rankings, which, you know, is respectable, and we know number one prospect for a minute now in the Yankees system in particular. But in all of baseball, he has now jumped to number 15, and that is And that's pretty damn high. That is a significant leap, and I don't know when the next rankings will be. I think they update them every few months. But obviously, we know Lombard is somebody to be very excited about, as we discussed here at great length. But, you know, it's cool to see, kind of just contributing to the hype of him, a leap like that, where he continues to skyrocket on the charts. Everything we hear from scouts, we know about his glove, but now the offense, not so much just yet at AAA, but it's such a small sample size, nothing to discuss there. We know what he did at AA and the way he's looked in spring training. He's looked, especially this year, with everything that we've seen, closer and closer to being a big league ready prospect. And whether it is this year, which if it is, probably a third base, we'll see, you know, if that opportunity arises. I mean, look, even if it was watching right now, look at this play right here. I mean, he just looks like a ball player. And whether it be this year at third or next year at short, which definitely at some point next year at short, maybe even to start the year come opening day or end of April, whatever it may be, he's a long-term shortstop. No matter what, we're excited about George Lombard and what he can be. But, you know, a piece of news like this, that he jumps to number 15, it further just puts him on the map. And people now, obviously we know, but around baseball are starting to talk more about George Lombard Jr. And again, whether it be what the scouts are saying and just the overall perception of him is, yo, this kid is legit. And then you get into, we talked about this on Talking Yanks yesterday too, just the makeup of George Lombard Jr. Now he's got that box office look. There's a big difference between the look in his eyes, which, again, as I said yesterday on Yanks, like I'm not Gene Michael, I'm not a scout or nothing, but you can tell, even as a fan, the difference in a player's eyes, whether it be the confidence or timidness. There's a big difference when looking at George Lombard Jr. compared to, not to pick on him while he's down, but a guy like Anthony Volpe or, you know, many other examples. Look at Cam and the way he looks with that killer mindset. Jose Caballero has a very similar, like, competitive attitude. I'm not saying Lombard is identical to those guys, but you can just tell, even with the AAA call-up video, there's just, you know, they ask him, or they tell him jokingly when they're setting up the call-up at AAA, they're like, we're going to sit you tomorrow. And it was part of like a joke, but at the time Lombard didn't know what was going on. He's like, why? And even just that, I hear that and I'm like, I said this yesterday, but I was palpitating. During that interview, every time I see Lombard, I'm just like, good. Because I love it. Everything I've seen with him makeup-wise furthers the excitement I have for him. And just, yeah, seeing this news right here, we won't touch too much more on it because we know about Lombard by now, but it is cool to see him jump to number 15 in all of baseball on the top 100 prospect list per Baseball America. And by the way, Baseball America is always like the prospect list to go off of, unless it's specified otherwise. You know, there's MLB Pipeline, there's like Fangraphs has their own too, but unless specified, if you hear a prospect chart rankings, it's always Baseball America. That is the premier, you know, destination for this sort of thing. And yeah, number 15 on the top 100 list of prospects in baseball right now. So that's exciting. What's going on with the Yankees in general is very exciting. And yeah, you had a loss last night, which those will happen. A clunker by Will Warren, that's totally fine. Those will happen. And, you know, kind of not brings things back down to earth or means he's coming back down to earth. But you can ask the question, is Will Warren a true 2.39 ERA pitcher like he was coming into yesterday's start on Wednesday? No, maybe not. But we probably knew that going into yesterday's outing regardless. Does that mean, though, he now is set to return to being a mid-4 ERA guy like he was last year? No, I don't think that's the case either. There might be like a middle ground here, and now his ERA is above 3. That's probably where he'll be at come season's end. I think true talent-wise right now, and the stuff yesterday was still great. Command just not so much. With Warren, I look at him as a true, like, 3.5, a sub-3.5 ERA guy. So, you know, an outing like yesterday, kind of, at least ERA-wise, does a little market correction, but I look forward to his next start, and I anticipate he will bounce back. It happens. We all know this. I'm not telling you guys this. I know you're well aware that clunkers will happen. Cam will have a clunker at some point, too. Cole will have clunkers. Like, that's just how baseball works. Paul Skeens, Jacob DeGrom, we just tagged him for 6 earned runs. Is he a 6 earned run pitcher? No. So, doesn't need to be said, but more so just doing some thoughts out loud here. I'm excited now for Will Warren's next start to see how he bounces back. And, so we lost yesterday. Rubber match today. Ideally, the Yankees can take this game. Again, no Ryan Weathers. It'll be Paul Blackburn on the bump. And I'm curious to see what the deal is going to be with Ben Rice. If I had a guess, just vibes-wise, gut instinct, I almost feel like he's going to be out of the lineup again today, which we should have our lineup relatively soon. But, Boone still says he maintains it's not going to be an IL situation, which I fully believe. You know, the x-rays came back clean, so that's just the facts of life. Like, his x-rays are clean. There's no damage there. You don't want to further push it, though, and lead to an injury or just have him in there when he can't be effective given the pain he may still have in that hand, and that affects his swing. Speaking of x-rays, by the way, Caballero was plunked, and it looked a little scary for a minute. He had x-rays. Those came back clean. X-rays were negative. He's all good to go. He says he wants to start today. Boone said, we'll see. But yeah, ideally Ben Rice is in there today. Obviously not sure he will be. And you got the lefty Gore starting, which we know Rice can hit lefties, no problem. And then some. That could be like a slight sliver of a reason on top of him still not feeling great to... I wouldn't be shocked if Ben Rice gets off today as well. But again, I'd like to think he's in the lineup come Friday, because at this point, if he is going to be indeed missing today's game on Thursday, that would be four straight days in a row without Ben Rice. And, you know, no matter what, even if he misses five games, it makes sense not to have IL'd him, because that would be at least a 10-day minimum. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, you want Ben Rice in there. We'll see if it's today, maybe even off the bench at some point. But yeah, I would guess right now, come Friday, he should return. In the meantime, Paul Goldschmidt will play. And, you know, he's been fine. You know, for a backup, you're losing Ben Rice. You want him to be in there. But having Paul Goldschmidt in reserve is not too bad. So in the meantime, we'll see what the deal is with Ben Rice. Stanton, we talked about an update on him. Might still be a minute regarding his return. He has started swinging but not running just yet. And Boone did mention yesterday, it's somewhere on the tick of the official wording, but I think the word was lingered. Like the injury has lingered a little bit with Stanton. So I would anticipate we don't see the return of Giancarlo on this upcoming road trip, which, reminder, we have, Milwaukee through Sunday. Then we go to Baltimore for another series with them in Baltimore Monday through Wednesday. Off day a week from today on Thursday, and then come Friday begins the first edition of the Subway Series. That will be at Citi Field. So really, I mean, if you consider the Mets part of it, I guess, that's a 9-game road trip, but really 6-game road trip, off day, come back home, go to Citi Field for 3 against the Mets. And, you know, I was listening to Mike Francesa yesterday, the GOAT, and, you know, he was saying, probably just trying to hype up Mets fans a little bit, throw them a bone, but he's like, this is going to be a big series for the Mets because, you know, this season, whether it be a lost year or they're still hoping to get back into it, obviously, the Mets will come to that series. That's going to be a big one for the Mets fans, you know, if they can possibly do something against this red-hot Yankee team. And I just said out loud right away, Claude Dog was right next to me, and I was like, good effing luck. I understand it's baseball, but I want to sweep the Mets. Like, there's no comparison here. It's almost to the point where they're so bad and so non-competitive that it's not even a thing where I'm going to fully apply the baseball logic of anything can happen. Like, the Yankees should take care of business against the Mets. Anyways, Milwaukee, Baltimore, Mets. After that, we'll then have the Toronto Blue Jays come to the Bronx to begin our first series against them since the ALDS last year. And we'll see what position they're in come that series, which again is like little past, I think it's like May 18th roughly is when it starts. But, or like right around May 18th to May 20th. I don't know if they'll be at 500 come that point. They're 16-21 right now. They continue to scuffle, and the Rays have been a part of that. The Rays are beating up on them. You know, the Rays beat up on us too. So I'm not even talking crap, but I kind of hope Toronto's back at 500 by that point. I still anticipate, you know, they're definitely going to be our competition over the Rays long term this year, at least come for the division race. No matter what, though, that series is going to be box office. And kind of the vibes we just set regarding what Francesa said about the Mets and the Yankees coming up in that series, you know, the Blue Jays, regardless of what their situation is, and Blue Jays fans may kind of look at that series as like opening day 2.0 almost. I know we're a ways away from that, but I'm excited for that Toronto series. It's going to be big. It's going to be box office. And obviously, you know, we'll be live for every single one of those games. It's a couple weeks, so I don't want to preview this too much. We'll do a full-on preview before it comes around. But yeah, it's a conversation we've had a lot about the American League. Like, who is the competition to really fear? And I'm not saying that to be a punk. Like, I understand it's baseball and things can change regarding other teams. At this point last year, Toronto wasn't anything special. We know what they ended up doing. And I believe in this Yankee team. I've considered them to be swoon-proof. It's not just a hot start based off of, you know, too many circumstances or vibes. It's no, this team is truly, legitimately really good and should only get better, as we know. But it is obviously baseball still, and things can happen, and I anticipate at some point we will be stressing about the Toronto Blue Jays just a little bit. And, you know, whether that's in the American League, we want to get the one seed. What's the team that scares you with that? Whether it be still the Blue Jays as a whole in the AL or the Seattle Mariners. Like, I consider the Yankees to be better than the Mariners, but they haven't really played ideal baseball just yet. Who knows what they're going to look like at their best? You want to win the East. You want to win the American League. And then the World Series will deal with whoever we face then, assuming it's the Dodgers. I'm not planning around the Dodgers just yet. I shouldn't plan around anything. We're still so far away from this. But, you know, you get to the World Series, that's just baseball, and you figure it out then. It's you try to navigate the series to win. In the meantime, though, in the idea of getting there, which getting there is not a success. It's a success because you have a chance to win. If you don't win it, nobody cares. Like in 2024, that season is up there for 2023 with me. I don't care. You get to the World Series and lose, nobody gives a damn. But you worry about that when you get there. In the meantime, who's our biggest competition in the American League? I still can't consider it to be the Rays, although maybe I should start showing them a little bit more respect. the Tigers have been going through it. They just lost Skubal, obviously. Framber only missed one start, but, you know, he continues to be a head case. Not an ideal start for Detroit. Not an ideal start for the Mariners. The Blue Jays we just talked about and all season long we talked about. The Houston Astros, for those who didn't see, they lose Carlos Correa for the year. They were probably already on their way to being, you know, relatively quote-unquote toast this season. Now it might be official with them. So at least in the American League, there's not a clear-cut 1A to the Yankees if we are number one, which I and many other people, besides even us guys, like baseball considers the Yankees to be a legitimate powerhouse in the American League, really the only one there is. So if we just go with that logic that we're number one, who's the clear 1A? There isn't one. There really isn't one, at least for now. And, well, I'll give some more respect to the Rays, and maybe I should, but because they just keep on winning. Their pitching has been great. I'm not going to go as far as to say they're our number one threat in the American League this year. I just can't do it. And if they are, you know, that remains to be seen. For now, I guess you could say in the short term they are. And maybe for the AL East they will be. But, yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting season for baseball, and I just wonder with the American League, what's going to be that team that we're not even thinking of right now that could emerge as a playoff contender? Doesn't mean we should fear them or anything, but with baseball, with how thin this American League is, there could be a team, like even the Rangers right now, they're still under 500. For all we know, they could finish the year with the second-best record in the American League. Like, we really don't know. And it's interesting. It's kind of fascinating, actually. It's also just a weird spot to be in. Like, who are the good teams in baseball? Now, the National League, you know about the Dodgers. The Braves have been terrific. Somebody mentioned yesterday, I love this point. I forget who it was. It may have been our guy John. But if the Yankees were, I want a Dodgers rematch because, you guys know how I roll. I want the Blue Jays rematch, too. Give me them in the postseason. I want to beat the best. I want to, you know, correct where we went wrong, and that's a nice way of doing so. But say we don't face the Dodgers. We were to face the Braves. That'd be the 30th anniversary of 1996. You know who would be in the booth chat? Because, you know, we know it's on Fox. John Smoltz. How awesome would that be? A Yankees-Braves World Series would go pretty hard. Also, I mean, not to be planning on the World Series, just going back to who's good in baseball. And in the National League, there's more legitimate contenders than in the AL. The Braves are good. The Padres seem to be pretty good. The Dodgers we know about. And in the Central, you know, a lot of those teams have been awesome so far to start the year. The Reds got off to a great start, scuffling a little bit as of late. But, like, I don't look at the Reds as, like, a true powerhouse in the NL. I'm not sure if there's any team in the Central that I look at as a true powerhouse besides the Dodgers. You could put the Braves up there, maybe the Padres as well. And the Phillies have started to turn around under Don Mattingly. So, you know, this is probably something we'll talk about a lot, just, like, evaluating who our main competition is. For now, we'll keep it Central, we'll keep it home, or we'll keep it East, I should say. With, you know, the Rays are right there next to us, half game back in the American League East. And, you know, they gained a game on us yesterday. That's why they're even closer now. And for that reason, you really want to win today's series. Take the rubber match. It'll be, again, Blackburn versus Mackenzie Gore. Would bet Ben Rice probably isn't in there, but we will see. Lineup should be out in a little bit. 12:35 first pitch on Yes. We won't be live for that because of, again, I'm going to be recording BT and just afternoon games, we've been live a lot more for during the week this year. Day games typically in the afternoon are tough for me during the weekday. We've been doing them though. 12:35 first pitch, I can't really swing being live for that. So apologies, we won't be live today. Obviously live here for the Morning Yankee Show. We'll be live again tomorrow morning for the Morning Yankee Show around 8. 5 days a week now, reminder, every single day, 8 a.m., right around 8 a.m. There might be times where it's 8:10, 8:15. Had to take a quick bathroom break this morning, Chad. That's why I was tardy. But yeah. We'll see what the deal is come today's series finale. We'll talk about it more tomorrow. But you want to win this series. You don't want to, you know, offset the vibes a little bit, which not to be concerned about that. At some point, we will lose a series. That's baseball. But more so just talking about the Rays and the competition in the AL East, the American League. Right now, yeah, the 1A that we're talking about as of right now is the Tampa Bay Rays. And for all we know, come tomorrow morning, we could be in second place. And that's not ideal. So we've got to monitor the Rays. We got to do our part. And doing our part today involves winning the series against the Texas Rangers. Chet, I think that might be all we got for this episode here today. I wanted to switch it up a little bit. Now, yesterday I mentioned how I neglected my sleep schedule a little bit. And I didn't love that episode yesterday. I think I was a little bit too sluggish. And I apologize for my performance in the show yesterday, Chet. It won't happen again. See, I'd be a great Yankee. But no, more so talking about, I think yesterday's show was very much like game recap vibes. And when you're doing that, like just doing an actual game recap, full on deep dive. Sometimes it feels like you're just like regurgitating information from the play-by-play of the game. I didn't love the way I operated yesterday's show, so we switched it up a little bit today. And part of that was there's not much to talk about from yesterday's game. It's just Evaldi was great, Warren wasn't, Judge went deep, Rangers win. That's that. But we'll do it a little bit differently going forward where we'll talk about the game. We won't do a full on like play-by-play breakdown of every little thing that happened. I feel like we kind of did that a little too much yesterday. So, you know, we're still finding our footing with exactly how we want to run this show. I liked how the way today's went, talked about a lot of things. And that's something we'll do a lot. We'll discuss the in-season stuff. We'll discuss the previous nice game. But today, like, the topic was I wanted to talk to Spencer Jones. There'll be times where, you know, we talk about things that don't even pertain to the current squad at the given moment or even this year. Like, we'll continue to branch out with our topics. Always keep it Yankee-related, obviously. It is indeed the Morning Yankee Show, after all. But, yeah, any suggestions you have for the show, obviously it's kind of still in its infancy to a degree. So I'm open to suggestions. I'm open to, you know, always some constructive criticism, things you guys may want to see. So, yeah, I think that's all we got for today's show. Everybody have a great rest of your Thursday. It is cloudy out right now, but apparently, rumor has it, per the Weather Channel chat, it is supposed to start getting pretty sunny out and nice come a couple hours from now. So should be all good weather-wise for our 12:35 first pitch. Again, no watch party. We'll be back tomorrow for the Morning Yankee Show at 8, and we'll also be live for the first game against the Brewers in Milwaukee. But yeah, that's going to do it for this episode. Everybody have a great rest of your day. Go Yankees. Hopefully win a series today. And yeah, that's all I got. I'll see you guys next time. Let's go Yanks.